right, this is Pure Decking for Thursday. What the hell is today? June the 26th, 2014. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and how many child labor laws the FBI has been violating with their online agents.
You mean another 12-year-old girl? I mean, they've been FBI agents.
I mean, you know, they employ so many kids. I mean, it's just
amazing.
That was a terrible joke. I'm Morbson. Tonight I have really bad jokes and scotch. And with me, we have, of course, RU486. We have
Hello.
The BSV.
And
we have the Sard. Sard, I don't have a theme for you.
No, 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 Sard.
Wow.
He
how
don't
incredibly
look. Well, you know, if you were going to look like any of the Batman, it probably would have been the Adam West version. I just want to say that.
Yeah. My favorite gif of that is the one where he's holding the bomb over his head and all it says is, oh, fuck. My favorite. There you go. My own intro.
So
I'll clip that out and get added to the soundboard next week.
Well,
I'm gonna have to rebuild my soundboard. This tablet is like failing, and I'm not really sure I even want to screw with it anymore. So I've got all the stuff to build the new one that I've kind of designed. It's actually gonna consist of an Android tablet and an iPad and a mixer.
Yes, because buying them off the shelf is just so yesterday.
So I'm I believe it's called Overkill, but I want to have fun with it, so I don't care. And so there's that aspect of it, but I'm hoping to make the shows a little bit easier to run with some of this stuff, or at least give myself more stuff to play with while I'm doing a show. And I just realized the joke I could have made. Anyways, so yes, I am behind on the site. You know, I've been posting the shows like the right before I do the next one. So
but what he's saying to all his fans out there, suck his balls.
Well,
I need to listen live.
I know the website's behind. Pretty much I haven't had a weekend in 2 months. I'm just gonna throw that out there. And by weekend I mean, you know, 2 days to just sit around and do fuck all.
Dude, I haven't had a weekend in what, 2.5 years, man. Because my week never begins.
Oh, I was going to say, you're not employed.
Exactly. I mean, a bitch to me about your 3 months of not having weekends. Oh, my God.
Well, okay, my point is I haven't had a hell of a lot of free time. Or at least free time where
Spurgy
I was...
And Spurgy just went up 3 points on the show.
Fine, never mind then. I'll just update it whenever the hell I feel like it. Screw you.
Sorry, Dad. Disappointed Dad.
The point I was getting at is I think that I was I'm pretty sure that's going to change here in the next couple of weeks, so hopefully I can get back to getting the site updated on a regular basis, maybe do a redesign or something. So anyways, let's go on to a discussion. So everybody's kind of going nuts over the Supreme Court. Apparently they decided you need a warrant to dig through somebody's cell phone if you arrest them. And they put out some really fun opinions on this. Cycros actually sent me the Ars Technica article. I also found one on New Republic. Supreme Court on Wednesday ruled unanimously that the authorities generally may not search the mobile phones of those they arrest unless they have a court warrant. The Obama administration and prosecutors from the states across the country had lobbied the High Court in briefs. Lawyers in briefs. I hope they mean legal briefs and not, you know, tight underwear.
Don't wreck the image. Don't wreck the image. Oh, this is great.
That's what RU wants to see, is Ruth Bader Ginsburg in a pair of briefs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what's the Soda de Maya in a... in a little negligee sitting up there presiding over... This is constitutionally hot.
What do we do? Make it 5 minutes in before it got weird?
Well, you have to admit it would make the Supreme Court rulings a bit more interesting.
Well,
a lot
you
more
know,
people would watch it. And all those people are very, very bad people, and if you would be one of them, shame on you.
Anyways, to allow police officers to be able to search arrestees' gadgets, not just mobile phones, without a warrant. Basically, because there's so much personal information on a cell phone, the court compared it to searching through somebody's home. And I tend to agree with them. In fact,
they got something right.
Yeah, nope. They did. It was a 9-0 decision, too. It was unanimous.
That's awesome.
Pretty much what the court did was they went back to founding principles, the original intent of the Fourth Amendment, right? And they said, there's so much private information on these cell phones that searching through it kind of defeats the point of having, you know, any kind of protection against unreasonable search and seizure if they can just arrest you, take your phone, and search through it looking for more evidence. So I agree with the reasoning, but I have some problems with the decision. First and foremost being that it only references cell phones. I couldn't find any mention other than the state's lobbying for it. I couldn't find any mention of tablets. I couldn't find any mention of laptops. I couldn't find any mention of, you know, portable hard drives, storage, like a flash drive you keep on a key drain kind of thing. None of that, just cell phones. So the first thing I see getting abused is, you know, the cops searching through somebody's iPad, right?
Right.
And then they say, well, no, you didn't have the right to do that. You need a warrant. Oh, no, that's for cell phones. This is a tablet. And then, you know, the next marketing term comes out. You know, that's not a cell phone. That's a phablet.
A phablet?
Oh, yeah, that's what they were calling the oversized cell phones.
Who was calling it that?
Yeah,
why
exactly.
Didn't you punch them immediately?
We wanted to.
I don't advocate violence, but in this case, I do.
Well, Mops, the way you get around that is you just put labels on all your electronics and call them with cell phones.
This is a cell phone. One of those little, what are they called? The Dynamo label makers? This is a cell phone. This is a cell phone. This is a cell phone.
Perfect.
I like it.
There's no way that this could fail. Yeah.
I see it's absolutely no problem with this.
So. My trunk is now a cell phone. This suitcase is now a cell phone.
In the New Republic article, they talked about it a little bit. Jeffrey Fisher, apparently one of the lawyers for the defense, actually compared searching cell phones to writs of assistance and general warrants that sparked, you know, that were around during the American Revolution. And it's pretty interesting how hard and heavy they're going with it. No, your cell phone is private and the police need a warrant to search it. But the thing is, everybody's going nuts over this, but a couple of things. One, this is specifically referring to people they've already arrested. That was the two cases they decided on. So if they've arrested you for something else, they still need a warrant to go through your phone. By extension, I assume that means that if they just stop you on the street, they still need a warrant to go through your phone. And that's good. Except cell phones usually have their data stored in a couple of different places. You have a copy on the phone, and your cell phone service provider has a copy on their systems because they keep records too. And under third-party doctrine, which is the legal idea that if you give up your data to a third party, you have no expectation of privacy. As I mean, now AT&T or whoever your cell phone provider is could still require a warrant to or a subpoena to give up the information on, you know, that would be on your phone or whatever. But we know that they don't. In fact, we know that several cell phone providers have a portal and charge a regular rate to the police for pulling information. So
great service too.
Yeah,
great
it's,
service.
It's not as fantastic as everyone makes it out to be, because if you think about it, almost all of the regular cell phone information that police would be interested in is duplicated somewhere else that you don't control. you know, your email is usually, you know, some sort of a, you know, your ISP's email or, you know, a Gmail account or whatever, right?
Nope. My computer crashed. Can't get my emails ever again.
Yeah, the old IRS defense. You snap the phone in half. Nope, my computer just crashed.
Yeah. Old, everything's lost. Lost forever.
But, well, that's what they're claiming, right?
Yeah.
Sorry,
I forget what case it is.
Oh, whatever, no, we can get derailed into it. It's fine. I didn't like, get any links for it. I wanted to avoid it because it's gone so far into politics now. I mean, it's still stupid. Go ahead.
It was the equivalent of watching a 5-year-old stand there and go, nope, I don't know where it is. I was just playing in the sand pit with Dave, and I have no idea about who drew on the wall in crayon.
Now you got to go bringing Dave into it, really?
Just because it's my name on the wall, maybe Dave drew my name on the wall. the crayons, no, they broke, and we had to dispose of them. I don't know where we put it, how we did that. No, but it's definitely gone. We disposed of the crayons. But we don't know where we did it or how we did it or who does handle that contract.
Well, the funny part, you're not wrong. I mean, their defense is laughable. Oh, the computer crashed. You never heard of a hard drive crashing? Apparently, like, one of their press representatives actually said that. It's like, what, you've never heard of a computer crashing before? It's like, well, yeah, but you have to, they're called backups. And
yeah, you're the freaking government, IRS, whatever. Have backups.
Well, Sard, you would know, sir, about this too. There are legal requirements on companies, especially publicly traded ones, requiring you to keep like 2 years worth of email accessible in case of subpoena. And yep. I mean, the emails they're talking about are only about 6 months old, right?
And here it's 7 years.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Well, hell, the IRS requires you to keep 7 years of your tax information.
But they only keep 6 months of their own records. How the fuck does that work?
Yeah, they're just
how do they know who to audit if they only keep 6 months worth of records?
So, I mean, something's screwed.
It's a lie. That's why.
Dude, why doesn't the guy at the head of the hearings walk down and bitch slap that guy?
some of the members of the House who were questioning them tried.
Like. Yeah, it's the equivalent of a 5-year-old going, yeah, that's my name on the wall, but I didn't do it. I was in the sandpit all day. And I, like, asked Jeffrey, my imaginary friend. Oh, you can't. He just crashed. He's gone forever. I only knew him for 6 months. Couldn't tell you much about him.
Nice. Imaginary friend just crashed. That's kind of sad, actually, now that I'm I had an imaginary friend once, but he crashed.
He's gone forever. You keep any data backups of him?
I asked my dad for the floppy disk back. He just, like, you know, pulled it out and snapped it in half in front of me. Wow, I just dated myself. It's like, floppy disk? What's that?
Floppy.
Nowadays, a floppy disk is a sexual reference, so...
Really?
Kind of.
Yeah, of course. What?
Use it in a sentence, please.
I'd rather not. It's not that I can't.
Dave's
I just don't want to.
Disc snapped in half. Jennifer was very upset.
There you go.
Not seeing it. Squirrel.
Yeah, that's... I need that on the soundboard. Squirrel. I don't know. I didn't have really anything else to pick apart on the cell phone stuff, just that it's interesting how specific to cell phones they were. I love the rhetoric. I love the rhetoric. I absolutely love the rhetoric, comparing it, you know, back to first principles and the idea of privacy and the fact that it's going to make things a little bit harder, you know, for the freedom to have... You're for freedom from unreasonable searches. The state has to make some sacrifices, kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I love the rhetoric.
Process. They can't just do it right there on the side of the street.
Right. Not that getting a warrant's hard, but
man, I just envision a day when the give us all your electrical stuff. This is on the side of the road after you've been stopped. No, we're not going to go through it now. We're just going to download it, and we'll send you the fines in the mail.
That's actually the excuse the NSA does. If you think about it, you know, the NSA capturing all that traffic, they say they don't go through it until they get permission from the court, but they're still capturing it all. That's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
you're
ladies...
all dissidents now.
Yep. We've pointed it out. We're not allowed to do that. So.
Combatants.
All right, let's blazing right ahead here. First story up is from thehackerblog.com, and very original URL there, but hey, whatever. Sard, do you know what C99 is? I know BSV doesn't because I asked him earlier and he didn't. Do you know what C99 is? I would kind of expect Sard to know.
It was the model before R2-D2, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's...
No, man, it's not coming to mind right now.
It is a PHP shell. Generally, the idea is you would, you know, find code injection or someplace where you could, you know, somehow get some code up on a server and get it to execute it. And C99 was a very common web shell to upload to take over websites, like, you know, bugs and forums and shit like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out the thing's got a back door in it. And, you know, so it was kind of always considered a shady one to use. And, you know, it was very much considered website malware. And the guy who runs the hacker blog found this fantastic back door in it. If you know, if the URL is c99.php?c99shcook, so C99, you know, cook, you know, login equals zero, it bypasses authentication.
Awesome.
So, you know, the idea is when you would use C99 shell, you would, you know, set some sort of a password, username and password combination in the shell before you uploaded it. Well, this just skips that. So I have a feeling that was slipped in, so whoever wrote C99 can use any copy of it he ever finds.
But open source, right? So I mean,
it's PHP, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily that it's open sourced code. It's just that that's the nature of PHP.
I was gonna say, you know, just like the Linux kernel that had a backdoor put into it for a little while. Maybe someone got access to their GitHub. Or something, unauthorized access, and added it in there.
Oh, it's hard to say with something like C99, that's true.
Yeah, exactly. Or if they don't have that, you know, maybe the dude that made it was just a douche and did that on purpose.
I'm thinking anybody just wanted to give himself a way into any of them, ever.
Yeah.
But you know, the nice thing is that since this is now published, right there on the page talking about the, you know, the post talking about the backdoor in the C99 shell is a link to... a page with all the nice Google dorks for finding C99 shell. So, you know, if you want to go take over some web servers, there's your little how-to.
It is Friday night.
It is Friday night.
It's awesome.
So we know what are you's doing later.
Getting drunk and touching myself.
Not the answer I was expecting. Anyways.
You have your porn, I have mine.
Oh, yeah, look at that code.
Mm-hmm. Matrix, to me, was one of the most hardcore erotic scenes I've ever seen.
Remind me to never do that sound effect again. I bet somebody's going to clip that out and make a ringtone. Anyway,
God, I hope it's one of your work employees. Doesn't tell you they're missing.
Okay. Oh, that'd be creepy as hell.
Like, just the decking sound starts, like the intro, and then it finishes with that sound was. Hello? And he makes eye contact you all the time.
Single time. It's awesome.
I'm just going to wear a bag over my head at work now.
And then when you directly ask him about it, he's like, no, I never heard of the show.
I just found this on a random website. I just found this online, man.
Yeah. Yahoo?
Yeah. All right. Next one up is from The Register. Security researchers have uncovered a series of Trojan-based attacks which have infected several targets by infecting industrial control system software from the makers of SCADA and ICS systems. The majority of victims are located in Europe, and at the time of writing, at least one U.S. firm's compromised gear appears to be phoning home to the botnet control server set up by attackers. The story goes on and on about it. Basically, people plug their SCADA systems into the internet. This is not wise. There's and when it comes to technology, if you can make it work, it's not technically wrong, but it might be unwise. There's wise and not so wise, and plugging your, you know, SCADA system into the internet is probably not wise, and people have written viruses for them. This is actually similar to the Stuxnet stuff that was floating around a couple of years back.
Right.
So it's the same style of, you know, attacking this kind of stuff, except now it's just kind of floating around in the wild and mostly hitting stuff in Europe. The article goes on basically talking about how they don't know why they were targeted. I imagine attack of opportunity, they were targeted because they could be.
Exactly.
But
because it's out there on the internet responding to shit.
So,
like I said, I mean, a lot of that stuff, I guess, yeah, you could use it for remote administration or whatnot, but still, you would want something in front of those devices.
Yeah, I mean,
something,
worst
you know,
case
something
scenario.
Made to be an edge or border defense, you know, edge device.
Yeah, I mean, you're not at least be behind a VPN. Better yet, air gap it. Or, I know a lot of times they come up so they can, you know, get the readouts or see the dashboards at home kind of stuff.
Right.
So, see if you could make it a one-way kind of thing where the data can come out of it to go feed, you know, whatever software you're using to monitor it, but, you know, it can't go back in to issue commands at it kind of thing.
Right.
That would be some firewall voodoo with one of those things.
Yeah, you could do it. A lot of these people just don't set it up right.
Well, I'm not actually...
understand what the hell they're doing.
It would depend on the protocol that they're used to talk to these things and how they're monitoring them. I would assume there's got to be some way to dump out the information to, I don't know, like a VM or something, and then feed that into your web-accessible software so that you're not talking to the live system. Yeah, sure, it might have a second or two delay, but, I mean, really, you're looking at your industrial control system over the internet. There's going to be lag anyways.
Right. Well, so, why does your air conditioner need to talk to freaking Yahoo Mail or, you know, anything else on the internet?
Yeah, that's a good point, too. If it does need to be online for something, scope it down.
Yeah, at least the shit out of it.
Mm-hmm. So, glad I'm not the only one who thinks that's stupid as hell.
Yeah.
So, all right, next one up is from motherboard.vice.com, but it's also on Torrent Freak. Apparently, there's a subreddit called r full length films, and supposedly it's only supposed to be links to, you know, open Creative Commons, you know, stuff that you can actually post online without getting in trouble. Well,
I heard that's what it says now. It didn't say that before, but it says that now.
It does say that now. I don't know what it said before. But, and the guy who runs it was like, well, I wasn't really moderating it. Hell, I'd forgotten about it. Yeah, sure you did. But, so people were like the full-length movies you find on YouTube and shit like that. People were posting the links in our full-length films. So the MPAA, in its infinite wisdom, is trying to take down a subreddit like it's a separate website. Or maybe it's all of Reddit. It's kind of hard to tell with them. I mean, they're rather broad and stupid. So I'm not sure if they're trying to take down all of Reddit or at least just the subreddit. But pretty much all they've succeeded in doing is calling attention to the subreddit. Torrent Freak has traffic graphs and shows the spike after they published the article about it. And so if they didn't want people using it then, well, sorry about that.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of worked against them. I saw the same article. Like you said, like Torrent Freak said, you know, they were getting like 2,500 clicks a month or something like that. And now up in like in the last week, they've gotten over 300,000 individual people. So all they did was like, hey guys, here's free movies. Go check it out.
Yeah, basically. So it's like, really? I mean, it's just, really?
Probably not what they were expecting.
No, no, that would be a fail on their part. Because, I mean, I'm not sure how Reddit works with subreddits, which is crazy since we have one. But I haven't really paid much attention to it. You know, what happens if they decide they don't like your subreddit? Can they ban it? I mean, I suppose, yeah. I guess they could. I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So, kind of feel like you're going to start several themed subreddits now. I'm sure there's, you know, all kinds of private subreddits for swapping torrents and stuff like that if you get in the right groups.
I guarantee it.
So, I take it you're in a few?
No, but I know they're out there.
Yeah, I haven't really been looking much lately, truthfully. Let's see. Next one up is from Bloomberg. Apparently hospitals are getting into the data mining business. They're actually buying detailed customer data to build profiles on current and potential patients to identify those most likely to get sick so the hospital can intervene before they do. Information compiled by data brokers from public records and credit card transactions can reveal where a person shops, the food they buy, and whether they smoke.
Paranoid, am I?
Yeah. The largest hospital chain in the Carolinas is plugging data for 2 million people into algorithms designed to identify high-risk patients. While Pennsylvania's biggest system uses household and demographic data, patients and their advocates say that they're concerned that big data's expansion of medical care will hurt doctor-patient relationship. No, no, no. It's not the doctor-patient relationship you need to worry about. It's the patient health insurance company you need to worry about. Oh, we see that you've exceeded your candy bar allotment. Well, no, actually, I was buying that for a friend of mine. Yeah, you're lying to us. You know, it says here in your policy, you will only buy 3 candy bars a year, and you've clearly bought 4. You therefore no longer have health insurance.
That's a little scary. Not little. That's a lot scary.
Yeah.
I'm just like the line of, so hospitals can intervene before they do. So what?
You cancel your
suddenly
gym membership.
Get a knock on the dirt. Sir, we're expecting you to have a heart attack. Don't worry, there's an ambulance waiting up. Oh, there you go.
Minority report for medical care.
I think that's so cute. BSV thinks they'd use it for your benefit, not theirs.
It's like,
I just found the line funnier. I know it's not for your benefit.
I know. No,
you go open the door. There's a couple of guys wearing ambulance uniforms. We see you've canceled your gym membership, sir. You know, and they crack their knuckles.
Yep, trying to take that kidney out. You're not going to use it for any good anymore.
Congratulations. You've just been declared an organ donor.
But I'm not dead. Yes, you are.
We have it right here on this document.
Better.
You died of a heart attack. See? You bought a pack of cigarettes every other day and an entire grocery cart full of Snickers bars. So you died of a heart attack. The data says it right here.
Oh, Jackass 2050. You know, dude going in buying 3 buckets of lard, carton of smokes, a pallet of beer.
Please show up. Sir, you've been declared a danger to yourself. Come with us to a mental institution.
Yep. That's going to be Jackass 2050. And today we're going to buy an exorbitant amount of Vaseline and a dragon dildo. Wait for the government to show up and tell us this is going to be bad. I'm going to say, hold my beer. It's going to be great. It'll be a great show, Mops. Looking forward to it. It'll rate well. It'll be on Fox Saturday nights.
Oh, yeah.
9 p.m.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. I've lost my place in the notes. We just did the Bloomberg article. Okay, here we go. I'm blazing through these tonight. That's okay. Dojo's going to take a little bit longer than usual. Let's see. Next one up is from The Verge. The Supreme Court struck a dramatic blow against Aereo today in a ruling that put the TV streaming service as it currently exists on its deathbed. In a 6-3 ruling, the court found that Aereo's service violates the Copyright Act by playing back recordings of broadcasters' TV shows, even though it legally captures those shows over the air and obtains individual copies for each viewer. Aereo had argued that it was merely providing technology that its subscribers were renting in order to watch TV, positing that the viewers are responsible for playing back the recordings. Insofar as there are differences, those differences concern not the nature of the service that Aereo provides you so much as the technological manner in which it provides the service, the ruling reads. We conclude that these differences are not adequate enough to place Aereo's activities outside the scope of the Copyright Act. So for if anyone who didn't know, Aereo was a company that would let you rent a DVR and a digital television receiver and antenna in various parts of the country. So if you wanted to get New York TV, but you lived in, I don't know, Kentucky, you could rent an Aereo DVR in New York and set it to record shows that would go out over there in New York, and then you could play them back from the DVR, you know, over the internet.
That's pretty clever.
And it was a neat idea because it was using the provision of copyright that let things like TiVo exist, right? Or the old VCR rulings. Well, and everyone had their own rented unit. It wasn't a service like it wasn't like you go on there, click something, and watch a TV show of something that was recorded over the air. You had to rent the DVR and record it yourself. And that was purely a copyright thing. Well, the TV companies, shit a brick and have successfully shut them down, apparently.
They are paying the TV companies.
It's not even that, BSV. They could be pulling this out of the air. It's freely broadcast
to
anyone with a TV.
No,
you have a digital
are.
Receiver. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why this ruling is bullshit. Because, I don't know. I don't get how they can say it's...
No. Explain why it's bullshit, Sard. You were on the right path there.
It's freely available over the air. Just because you aren't there directly in that same city with a TV, physically there picking it up, why the fuck can't someone else do it for you?
Wasn't there something about expecting no privacy if you give your data to third-party companies?
Well, you see, again, that's the double standard
of... I'm pretty sure the air is a third-party company.
Yeah.
Or imaginary friend not found, BSB.
Dang it! I have a backup somewhere.
That's a better line than the other one. I gotta scroll up and write that one down. 404... friend not found. Yeah, I'm adding it to show notes because I know what the slug line I'm putting on the ticker is when I post the show. And I don't want to forget it. So, anyways, I mean, that's just... it's sad because it is a double standard. It is exactly a double standard of the rules apply only when it's convenient and only to everyone else. Yeah, it's exactly the same. It's exactly why you see the cable companies acting the way they are and why people are screaming about net neutrality right now, which they shouldn't be. They ought to be talking about application neutrality or maybe application equality, not net neutrality, because it's not what they want. They want their applications and their apps to be treated equally, not the network. But they don't understand that, so they all scream net neutrality. But, you know, whatever. But it's the exact same thing where they're allowed to have monopolies, but the moment somebody even comes close to infringing on that, they're finding every rule that they should be applying to themselves as well, but they don't, and suing. I mean, hell, Verizon preemptively sued the government for the right to get away from rules. So, I mean, it doesn't surprise me. It's just sad. Nobody?
No, I agree, dude. It doesn't seem right.
I need people who disagree with me more on the show.
They can try to grab random people off the street, but...
Well, that or I
let me go. Let me go and get anyone who has testified in front of Congress on this matter. They'll heavily disagree with you.
Oh yeah, especially if they work for the cable company.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, this one's fun. This one's from Ars Technica. Germany has opted not to renew its government contract with Verizon, citing concerns over the spying by the National Security Agency. The contract will expire in 2015, and the move marks a rare concrete step from Berlin following the October 2013 revelations that the NSA was spying on Chancellor Angela Merkel. It is Angela, not Angela, right?
Yeah.
Okay. A German language statement posted to the Ministry of the Interior website, Berlin notes that it needs an infrastructure with an increased level of security. Verizon has maintained the contract since 2010, so it's not actually that long running of a contract. The indications that Verizon is legally required to provide certain things to the NSA, and that's one of the reasons the cooperation with Verizon won't continue. Interior Ministry spokesperson Tobias Plate, really, that's your last name? Sorry, dude. Told reporters, according to the Associated Press. In February, German media reports that the NSA had been moved to bugging German ministries instead of the chancellor herself. So, yeah, that is the NSA spying actively costing business. Now, I just got done lambasting Verizon for how they're acting as an ISP, so I actually don't mind so much that Verizon isn't getting a contract, but for people who follow business and geopolitical politics, yeah, that's the NSA actively hurting U.S. business at this point.
Is it going to matter, though? That's what I'm wondering. I mean,
it's
a good statement. It's going to, you know, hopefully people will actively see. And like you said there, that's a good example of them actively hurting the U.S. economy by spying. But is it really going to matter?
Well, it's interesting that Germany was going with Verizon instead of, I mean, I'm assuming there are German cell phone providers.
There's got to be, I imagine.
I could be wrong. There may not be, but, I mean, you know, there's already so many established monopolies with this crap. Maybe there's not, but I would have assumed that most governments would go with whatever their country's cell phone provider is, unless they're just, like, awful, you know, just out of national pride, if nothing else. I mean, in Finland, isn't every child issued a Nokia phone at birth? I mean... I'm just guessing here. I could be wrong.
Well, I would have thought under competition and consumer protection that the government would have to call tender on its own phone services.
Yeah.
And not just play favorite with the national carrier, because that's how capitalism works, that everybody gets a level playing field. But if you're just going with your nation's national provider and skipping anyone else, then you're not really participating in the world capitalist stuff.
Well, no, that's a fair point. If you don't allow open bidding, and maybe Verizon won the open bid, but
free trade, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. You know, when I worked for university, because they got state funding, yeah, we had to do open bidding on everything. So
yeah,
you know, and sometimes that meant you got stuck going with a vendor nobody really wanted, but you know, the rules were structured.
They came with the lowest quote, you know. If the reputation of the NSA is damaging certain American products, then that's just the real free market.
No, that's absolutely true. That's true. So, I mean, I'm not saying I blame them. I actually had the story in there because I thought it was hilarious. It's like, oh, look, you're getting burned for being bad. But I'm also actually... I'll be honest, I'm dead tired here, so I'm going to be making mistakes. And I've been drinking scotch.
Blame the scotch.
Blaming the scotch.
Alcohol and tiredness never affects anybody.
No, we're fine. Although I got to be careful, I'm going to end up doing a Batman voice there if it keeps that up.
My parents are all dead.
We're going to play Batman. I'll be Joker. I've already killed your parents. You okay, BSV?
Yes, I'm just having trouble breathing.
Okay.
Try not to do it underwater.
Water, add it to the list.
I'm pretty sure I can breathe it eventually. Give it a few more shots.
You need a couple thousand years of evolution and a shit ton of caffeine. Oh, let's see. That was a Futurama episode where they were, you know, they had the Coca-Cola bottling plant and they let them become mermaids or something like that. All right. Last one up is from itgovernance.co.uk. Security firm Kaspersky's Lab has announced that in January it found evidence of a server being used to coordinate an attack on a European bank that appeared to have stolen 400,000 pounds in a week. Kaspersky declined to interview the bank, but Kaspersky declined to identify the bank involved, but said that it alerted the authorities. However, the criminals didn't leave anything to chance and deleted all the evidence that could have been used to identify them. Codenamed Luke, the attack is believed to have been a Trojan program that intercepted financial data and allowed fraudulent transactions to be made as soon as each victim logged into their online banking account. However, Kaspersky added that there are still gaps in knowledge of the attack. On the command and control server, we detected there was no information as to the specific malware program that was used in the campaign, said Vince Diaz, principal security researcher at Kaspersky Lab. We believe the malware used in the campaign could be a Zeus flavor. Well, that the source code to that got leaked a while back, so that's not surprising. Yeah, we all know what Zeus is. It's thought that Zeus was using the attack to insert rogue information in the bank's web pages that were downloaded, allowing confidential data to be stolen. The detected server has been shut down, but the bank warned that the thieves could strike again. So, what's actually happened here is you had this group set up, command and control server, and they had a variant on, I'm guessing, Zeus, because that's what the article says. And they were, I don't think they were actually attacking the bank directly. They were going after their customers and using it to intercept the banking webpage. Although it's possible, it might have been that the server was inside the bank's infrastructure. So, I don't know.
Not bad. They only actually have 400,000?
400,000, and they're scot-free. They don't know who they were.
That is not bad for a couple of months of work.
No, in a week, dude, it says.
Dude, you think it takes a week to set up something like this?
Yeah.
This is a team in a couple of months.
Yeah, set it up on Monday. By Friday, you're shutting it down.
Oh, yeah, your zero, your go time is a week. But the pre-planning on something like this to get away scot-free and leave nothing, somebody really thought about every system they were going through.
I agree. I tend to agree, are you? They definitely did at least a month of intel gathering and planning.
It takes a lot of planning to pull off something like this. I've thought about it.
You're not supposed to admit that.
That's fine.
Thought is not a crime yet. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure your government disagrees with that.
Sir, we're from the local hospital. We understand you've been planning crimes.
But just even think of the most basic attack of committing a crime, and then try and think of every variable that might come into play while you're pulling this off, and you've got to wipe it down and get away with no fingerprints, anything.
Well, the fact that they're not even sure what malware was being used is a pretty good sign that these guys had planned it correctly.
Yeah.
They used self-destructing malware. They had their server infrastructure set up such that if the server got popped, they didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And at least 400,000 that they know of. That's the other thing. That's money they know of.
A lot of times they don't figure
it out to way after the fact how much is actually gone.
Like, they're going to have to audit everything.
Oh, yeah.
Figure it out.
I do not envy
their... Somebody's got a job for life.
I do not envy their auditor's job. I do not envy them. That is going to be a pain.
And then if they did any damage leaving, because how did they pick them up? How did they find out they got in there? They must have damaged something. A system was alerted. Someone found it.
It's probably somebody figured out their account was didn't have the right amount in it.
Yep.
Notice an odd transaction.
Yeah. All right, let's... go ahead, Ari. You finish up.
I was going to say, that's a lot of individual sets of eyes looking at all these accounts over X amount of hours in a seven working day week.
Yep.
A lot of people, 8 hours a day looking at numbers. And no one figuring it out until one person went, hey, over here. And another person probably went, yeah, mine looks a little weird too. Mine looks a little weird too. And then it took a couple of days before it went up the chain before someone investigated. So the week report, no, I'm thinking this was ongoing for about 6 months. They just put it out that it was just a week.
Well, it's a week that they know of.
Yeah, make you feel better.
Yep. All right, let's roll into this. Yeah, this tablet is... Yeah, I think my soundboard is about done here. I am looking for suggestions of what to do with a worn-out old Android tablet. It's an Acer Iconia Tab A200 and runs like crap, even with a fresh ROM on it. So, if anybody has any ideas,
drag it behind your car.
Coaster.
That's one thing.
Drag it behind your car for 2 miles and then try and reboot it. If it boots back up, drag it for another 2 miles.
I'm pretty sure it won't make it a mile. All right.
I got a Steam game says it does.
Oh, there's a challenge.
There's a challenge. Now, the question is, how far can I get in Tennessee without a cop going, oh, excuse me, sir?
Oh, don't worry, man. It's for a bet with an Australian guy. It's totally legit.
Okay, that explains the tablet, but what about the puppy? Wait, puppy? What? Oh.
Oh, I left Rex tied to the back of the car. 404 dog not found.
There's just a leash.
Actually, that'd be a 500.
Just a leash and a bit of the collar. Bite marks on it.
We're sure there was one there a minute ago, but it's not there now.
That's horrible. I'm going to stop now and talk about Wildcard Expansion. All right. So for Digital Dojo tonight, I've got a link to a pretty good article explaining it, but I've talked to everyone kind of pre-show, and I'm pretty sure nobody knows what this is, at least on the panel, I should say. Just to double check, anyone ever heard of Wildcard Expansion in Linux before?
Nope. Know what wildcards are, but not expansion.
Okay. The way Bash handles wildcards is it internally expands the wildcard out to a list containing everything that matches the wildcard and then passes it into the command, right?
Makes sense.
Okay. So this introduces an interesting error, and this does work. If you have access to a Unix box, you can go test it. It's pretty interesting. If you have a file name that would be a valid parameter or switch to a command, and you throw the command with a star, it might interpret that file name, if you formatted it correctly, as part of the command. So, as an example, let's say you had a file named -l. This is a very, very simple, example here. So, you're in vartemp, and there's some junk files in there, and then a file that you've touched and named -l. And by the way, if you're wondering how to do this, it's touch space dash dash space and then put quotes around the file name you want. That was the way I got it to go. There's some programmatic tricks that you can use to do it as well if you want to get into scripting, but just touching it was the quickest way I could think of to do it. But just trying to touch it without the dash dash in the quotes, it actually thought that it was a parameter I was trying to pass to the touch command. But, and then you do an ls star, it will run the command as though you had typed ls-l and then, list out all the other files in the folder.
Huh.
Now, that's interesting, right?
Yeah.
Now, start thinking about what you can do with this if you have user access to a system but not root access.
Oh.
Let's say you wanted to get a copy of Etsy Password and Etsy Shadow so you could throw them at John the Ripper later, right? Well, you can't get at them if you don't have the right privs. Well, let's say there's a cron job that, for whatever reason, does a copy out of a folder you can write in. Well, if you name a file, whatever, and then put a space in it, slash Etsy Password space slash, put spaces in the file name, and then valid paths, and somebody runs that copy command, it will go out of the directory and grab those two files because it will interpret the spaces and the paths you put in the file name as valid expansions of the command, wildcard expansion. That article I linked, if you pull it up, Sard, has a few more examples. I think they go into detail on a possible exploit with an SCP command.
Okay.
They run the example of, you know, let's say you've put together a web app, you know, so somebody can drop a PHP application on their web server, and you know, and you like put in your instructions to SCP the files into place on their server. Well, if they look at the code, they won't see anything in the script that looks awry. But you've got a file in your archive that, you know, goes out of the directory and triggers another script somewhere else to run, right?
Huh.
Because you've got as a parameter to the SCP, like dash exe space, and then the name of a script somewhere else in your file tree there. It would go run it. This trick works with find commands. You know, dash exe space. You know, you could make a find command start deleting stuff with, you know, dash exe space rm dash f bracket bracket. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, Yeah, it's basically code injection on the bash command line using file names. I'm trying to think of if I explained crazy. This well enough. I mean, Sard, you're kind of familiar with Linux, so you know what I'm on about.
I'm getting my head around it now.
I mean, if you're not familiar with the command line, it's a little bit rough.
Hmm.
I'd
have to run through it.
Yeah, it's a very Linux-y thing. But pretty much the short version of it is the way Linux handles wildcards is it expands out the list, and if you've got valid switches or paths as file names...
It can interpret them. Switches.
Yeah.
Right.
So
okay.
You can end up with commands going way outside of the parameters you expect them to because of somehow a bum file name got in there.
Huh.
And now something to keep in mind, very rarely will you find a legitimate file with a dash as its, you know, opening character in the file name.
Right.
One, it's kind of a pain in the butt to get Linux to even let you do it.
Yeah, because you'd have to escape it out somehow. Or
yeah, you have
quotes,
to.
I guess
that's exactly what you have to do. You have to escape it out, and or you know, you use some command line trickery to get it to let you do it. I had it was interesting just figuring out how to get it to let me create a file to test it out.
Right.
And that's where I found that touch command that I figured out earlier.
Huh.
But even that. You still really need to escape it out anytime you try to access the file to remove it. That was the other fun thing was, you know, once you made the dash L, trying to do an RM, kept throwing a syntax error.
Yeah.
Just like you're trying, the hell you delete this thing now. You can't actually reference it. And that's when the same dash dash and then putting it in quotes did the trick. But still, it was just like, man. So I can't imagine... I mean, it's hard to imagine where you would a place where you would accidentally do this, because it's valid to put spaces in file names these days. So you know, I could see putting somebody might accidentally put a full path in a file name, but you know, valid command switches. That's that's a hell of a mistake.
That's odd. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to ask next. So how do you protect against this? I guess.
Well, the same way you can protect against most other stuff, you control who has access to your box. And you look at what you're uploading.
Yeah.
That means you check the scripts, and you actually expand out the damned, you know, archives and look at what's in it. You don't just upload it, extract it, and run it.
Good point.
So, but yeah, you should check out the article. It's a fun concept. It's honestly, it's pretty rare. I spent some time checking some things at work because we had some mysterious things happening that would have been a good explanation for. But, I chalk it up to a developer who fixed their script and doesn't want to own up to it. But that's me personally. So, it's like, oops. Well, I don't want to get fired. Nope, that wasn't me. See, it's fine. My script is fine.
You're the squirrel.
Squirrel!
Pretty much.
But I don't know how badly I lost BSV and RU there, but it's interesting, you know. It's literally command injection on the bash command line via file names.
Right. And that is pretty sick.
At least it's you've got different. No worries about your end user fucking up and doing it.
It would be hard to get. I mean, I could see if you're trying to punch out a command somehow accidentally getting that in as a file name. But man, to do that by accident, that'd be a one of a million fluke. But I mean, if you pwned a box and you wanted a way to, you know, really screw with the admins trying to figure out what you were doing after the fact, because I've been doing security for a while, I'd never heard of this till the other day.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Pretty crazy.
So, anyways, that's all I got for tonight. Of course, listening to the stream while I was working on it, Pure Decking is on Thursdays. I believe Missing Dialogues is taking a break, so Pure Decking is the only active show on the network right now. Of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback forum, the subreddit, the IRC chat room, sending psychic messages to Big Brother Lord. And, Asard, are you still answering TCP/IP via carrier pigeon?
Yeah, sure.
The last one was delicious.
Yeah.
Okay, now what about TCP/IP via sewer rat?
I'm up for trying new things, sure. I hear they eat those in Mexico or some place, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm delaying I find music to close the show out with. So, let's see. What we got?
We should make a Galaxy 15 protocol, and that's how you can contact us.
Just the Galaxy 15 protocol straight up.
The Galaxy 15 protocol, yep. Something totally custom, something totally crazy that contains just text, and we'll have some daemon running somewhere, and that's how people can.
But you can only communicate in 5 characters or less.
There you go, perfect.
I like it. It's like Twitter, only more restrictive and laughs at you.
320 characters, fuck you, you get 5.
Man, I cannot type tonight. Having one of those nights, man. I'll tell you what. I seriously thought about skipping the show. It was just like, you know, I'm tired.
Yeah. Sounds like you've been pretty freaking busy.
Well, I'm going on like 4 hours of sleep last night, so.
Well, that'll do it also.
That's always fun.
I get a video of a goat running 40 kilometers an hour for after the show.
404, an imaginary friend not found.